It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I am Dan Harris, joined by Mike Tagliere, and you can find us on Twitter at DanHarris80 and at MikeTaglierNFL. Saw a lot of good stuff today, Tags. We saw an overturned call on pass interference. We saw a tight end apparently forget what sport he was playing and try to spin the ball behind his back right into a Jameis Winston interception. And we saw the most Kalen Ballage game in the history of Kalen Ballage games. We had a little bit of everything. It was a good day of football.
I have not had a chance to research Kalen Ballage's like season so far, but as I was like going through the games today and like looking at, I looked at the box score of that one in particular because I didn't watch much of that game. To be honest with you, I didn't. And I saw Ballage's 9 carries for 9 yards and a touchdown, and I was like, and then I got to the receptions. I can't remember what it was there, but it was a low number too, and I was like, you know, I wonder what is like the least efficient season of all time. And I'm going to go through and figure that out this week because it's like a mission of mine. Whenever I have to see things like that, that make me like, wait, who's actually been worse? I don't know if like, you know, a minimum 100 touches. And then we'll say like, what's the worst, the least efficient season of all time? He has to be up there, right?
Oh, without question. And just to put a pin on it, it was 5 catches for 8 yards.
That's today. What it was, yeah.
Just to get in there. Well, 6 targets, to be fair. Look, playing Ballage is perfect for the Dolphins right now, right? Because they can continue to be like, look, we're trying. And it basically, he's the only guy left back there anyway. But they can be like, look, we're trying. And secretly, they can actually go back to tanking. Because whenever he has the ball, it's just a negative for the team. But yeah, he's averaging like 2 yards per carry on the season. It's something like, you know, absolutely incredible amount of futility that he's able to show. But the fact is that this is really what he was. Now, I imagine that he is not your biggest winner on the day. Is that fair assumption?
That is a fair assumption, yes.
Who is?
I'm going to go DJ Chark here. There's a few wide receivers going into this week, and I wanted to see like quarterback situations play out. Because, I mean, we're at the time of year where it's like not many players are going to move like drastically in your rankings. But DJ Chark was one of those guys that I was willing to move one way or the other. And knowing that Nick Foles targeted him a season high 15 times, I'm like, okay, I'm sold. I'm moving DJ Chark up in my rankings. And the remaining schedule is fantastic. So he's clearly my biggest winner this week.
All right. So let me ask you something. Where is he going up to? I believe coming into this week, you had him at 24th. So still a wide receiver two again in 12 team leagues in half PPR. So where is he going up to?
I moved him up to wide receiver 16. Wow. I even debated going higher than that, but I was like, I don't want to go over the top. It was just one game. Nick Foles did throw the ball a ton. I think it was 47 or 49 attempts or something like that. So there were a lot of pass attempts to go around, but the fact that he didn't pepper, you know, D.D. Westbrook with a million targets or the running backs, it was reassuring to me, and that's why I'm saying I looked at the schedule, because this is the point in the year where we can actually look at the schedule and say that it matters, because we have a big enough sample size to say, okay, this is a plus matchup, this is a bad matchup, and D.J. Chark's remaining schedule, if you look at it, he's going to go up against the Titans, who are down Malcolm Butler, so they're already shorthanded there. Tampa Bay after that, who just gets crushed. The Chargers, okay, not a great matchup, not terrible though. And then Oakland and the Falcons in weeks 15 and 16. Those are the biggest weeks for fantasy championships. So DJ Chark to me he's moving up borderline wide receiver one status, but I have him as more of like a high end wide receiver two.
Yeah, this was a pretty disappointing game all around for the Jaguars, other than Chark, because you know Leonard Fournette really didn't do anything. Saw just 8 carries on the day for 23 yards. He did get 7 catches again. And D.D. Westbrook, kind of this is what fantasy owners were waiting for. They, you know, he and Foles had showed kind of a great rapport in the preseason. Everybody kind of thought it would transfer back, but just 4 catches for 32 yards. So I agree, Chark is certainly one of the biggest winners on the day. How about your biggest loser?
Brian Hill. Brian Hill.
Now, to be fair, he did have a touchdown at the very end that was called back. That is little consolation to the fantasy owners who spent their entire fab budget on him. Just a terrible day. Let me ask you something, Tex. Obviously, there are fantasy owners out there who did waste their entire remaining budget, essentially, on this guy. Let's assume at this point that Devonta Freeman is going to be out. It was initially called a 2-week injury. Are you going to start him in a tough matchup against the Bucs? Where do you think you're going to have him ranked next week, assuming that Freeman is out?
Yeah, I'm guessing that Freeman's going to be out. And even if you say Freeman's going to be out another 2 weeks, let's pretend that. I mean, he has matchups against the Bucs and the Saints. Those are two of the absolute worst matchups in football for running backs. So that's why, like, Brian Hill to me was someone that I talked about in the waiver wire show. I'm like, pick him up this week. Like, spend your fab budget, play him this week, and then sell him afterwards, because he's going to have a big week, and then he's got a brutal schedule, and then Devonta Freeman's going to be back before long. So there was concerns with the schedule, but this was supposed to be the week we were supposed to be able to rely on him. If there's someone that thinks they're going to be cute and like, oh, you know, Brian Hill's a buy low, he just had a down game, and they're going to buy low on him or something like that, yeah, I think he's closer to drop status than he is to start status right now.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of things that stuck out. One is that, look, Kadre Allison was... he got the touchdown. He was in on the goal line. And a lot of times, again, Hill did score at the end, towards the end of the game, and they called it back. But the other thing is, you know, I killed at least Devonta Freeman. He never gained more than 30 yards on the ground. And a lot of it is just that the Atlanta's offensive line is terrible. And you thought this, though, was a great matchup, but still it was sort of the irresistible force meets the immovable object, and the immovable object won. And the problem is that, unlike Freeman, Hill was unable to do it in the air, which is what Freeman usually does to save his mediocre rushing totals. Just one catch here for 8 yards. So yeah, it is just a really, really disappointing game in a good matchup. And again, a game where, you know, you knew coming in the Falcons are going to win the game 29-3. You would have thought Hill had a monster day, but certainly a horrible performance by someone who was started pretty universally wherever he was owned. So a tough, tough time for him. Now, there were plenty of other, you know, good and bad performances, but one or two of the guys who I want to talk about will come in our next segment, which is What's Your Problem, Man? My favorite segment. And we're going to start with Courtland Sutton here, another guy who's perpetually in here because I'm always yelling at you for having him too low. Tags, you had him 28th in your rest of season rankings. And again, that's not that crazy. I had him 20th coming in. So, I mean, that difference at this point, we've talked about a lot. Once you get into that wide receiver two range at the end, it's not that big a difference between spots. But, you know, 9 targets, 5 catches, 113 yards today against the Vikings. He's got at least 72 yards or a touchdown in every single game since week 2. I get the concerns. We've got Brandon Allen throwing him the ball. We may have a new quarterback coming soon, but he's got to be a wide receiver two going forward, right?
Yeah, I moved him up into wide receiver two territory. Like, him and DJ Chark are guys that I'm battling over, trying to figure out who's higher. Sutton was another one that I was worried about Brandon Allen, because I went back and I watched that game against Cleveland during their bye week. I went back and watched it. That's how interested I am in Courtland Sutton. But he had a 40% target share in that game, and like, he made some crazy catches. Like, the touchdown catch, like, there's 1% of the NFL that makes that catch. And Courtland Sutton, this is like one of those players that I have to admit I was wrong on. I mean, I thought that there was a ceiling with him in terms of like when he was coming into the NFL, but I didn't know if it would translate. It was like, you know, playing at SMU. I didn't know. There was a whole bunch of factors with it. And I'm like, the range of outcomes is really big, but he kind of struck me as someone that could have bust potential. Watching him, like I watched almost that entire game today against Minnesota. Courtland Sutton's a monster. Like that dude, he is translating, and that range of outcomes is towards the high end, and I can't wait till he gets a quarterback. Honestly, Denver should have won that game. They had the ball. They ran three straight plays in the goal line with like, you know, 12 seconds to go, and none of the plays went to Sutton, which is idiotic because he continually beat the Vikings cornerbacks all day long, like a drum. I mean, Brandon Allen, Joe Flacco, both bad quarterbacks. It doesn't matter. Courtland Sutton's getting it done. So yeah, I was too low, and I deserved this. What's your problem, man?
Oh, thank goodness. All right. So where is he going? I don't know if you said the number. How high is it going now in your rest of season ranks?
I'm teetering with him in between like the wide receiver 15 and wide receiver 17 range. So obviously I have him in wide receiver 2 territory right now.
Yeah. No, he's about as talented as they come. He's having really a solid, just really reliable season, which is something that's kind of surprising given the woes that you've seen in the Broncos passing game. But it's been good to see going forward. Now, another guy who I think you might be a little too low on, and again, I've called you out either indirectly or directly on this guy, is Marvin Jones. Now, he today, 5 targets, and not overwhelming, which is usually the case. 4 catches, though, 43 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's got at least 77 yards or a touchdown in 6 of his last 8 games. Now, there was Jeff Driskel today, and I get it. He is liable to go out there and put up a 2-catch, 17-yard game, absolutely. But, I mean, you've had him outside the wide receiver 3 range here, Tags. I mean, at least he's got to go into your top 36, right?
Yeah, he's number 35 right now. He's a guy that seemingly is not too affected by Jeff Driskel, which is really weird. Again, Kenny Galladay is the one who's been suffering quite a bit with Driskel under center. I don't know how long it's going to be till Stafford comes back because they said it was a 1-3-week injury, and this is now 2 weeks. So, I mean...
Well, did you hear the report this morning, Tags, from Rappaport, which says that he talked about something being a 6-week injury, not saying that he's going to be out that long, but something that will take him longer to recover from. So this could be the Jeff Driskel show for a couple more weeks at least.
I mean, honestly, if I'm Detroit, I kind of say, you know what, Matt, let's play it safe with your injury because they're not making the playoffs. And why not, you know, get a higher draft pick? So like, let Jeff Driskel keep starting. Let Stafford heal up. He's your franchise quarterback. And I mean, The issue at Marvin Jones is I get to the players that I would debate putting him over. The guys like DeVante Parker, who's been really consistent. And I'm not putting him over Parker just yet. Sammy Watkins, I think, is one of the better buy lows in fantasy football. And we haven't seen the Monday night game yet. But he's a guy that's continually seeing, like, he's averaging over 8 targets, you know, from Patrick Mahomes. That's his performance will come. So it's the idea of buying low there. Whereas Marvin Jones is a guy that has had 5 or less targets in half of his games. So that's the concern to me is, like, I follow targets. I'm more of like a realist when it comes to that stuff and expect touchdown regression, where it's like I could see moving him up a couple spots and a few other players moving down, but it's in that range, right? I think it's like the 30 to 35 range is where he belongs.
All right. I think that is fair. I'm definitely not going to argue with that. Again, I think I had him 31 coming in or something like that. But, you know, again, when you get into this range, it's really not that big of a difference necessarily. But he is somebody who has at least enough sort of, you know, his floor is pretty low, but more often than not, he's going to give you at least a solid game that you can get by with. Now, Tags, do you remember it was like maybe 5 or 6 seasons ago, the Cardinals-Seahawks game, it was in week 16. It was on Sunday Night Football, and Marshawn Lynch, late in the game, broke off this insane 80-yard run. Like, Chris Collinsworth is hysterically laughing because he's just breaking all these tackles. He finished it off by jumping in backwards into the end zone, making an obscene gesture.
Oh, yeah, and doing his little Michael Jackson gesture. Yeah, I remember.
Yes, exactly. We won't exactly talk about it too much. But that, Tags, is my favorite fantasy moment because it capped off the most improbable comeback ever in my favorite league that's like this half-roto, half-playoff format. I mean, it's pathetic, but it is truly one of the highlights of my life. But legitimately, I used up all my fantasy karma in that league on that run. Since then, I've had the absolute worst luck ever. This year, I've outscored my opponents by 200 points, but I'm probably going to miss the playoffs. It's awful. Every single week I play, and whatever team I'm playing, I know they're just going to go nuts. But do you know where I never have to worry about that? On FanDuel. Because with FanDuel, you don't need to worry about injuries or busts or having the Skittles curse, as I affectionately refer to my situation in the Marshawn Lynch League. It is a new team each week with none of the hassles of season-long fantasy. You can build a lineup however you want. I mean, look, if your week 11 matchup is over here, okay, you can just look tomorrow night and play FanDuel because there's going to be so many points scored in Mexico City. I mean, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Melvin Gordon, Keenan Allen. You heard tags just before mentioned Sammy Watkins, who has been really touting pretty much the whole week. You can get any of them in your lineup for Monday Night Football because you can build your lineup however you want. Now, this season, FanDuel has more ways to win cash prizes. I mean, seriously, there are millions of dollars out there and once-in-a-lifetime experiences during every single game, every single week. And right now, FanDuel is offering a great promotion to new users. You can get $5 in free credits just by signing up and making your first deposit. To get this great offer, just go to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros or download the FanDuel app. That's FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. All right, Tags, let's get into the games and let's start Thursday. Browns 21, Steelers 7, between the Myles Garrett helmet swing and all the injuries. Just kind of one of the ugliest nights of football in a while, but let's talk about the Browns here. Baker Mayfield throws two touchdown passes. He runs for another. He does make a lot of bad throws, and that's kind of part and parcel with what you're going to get from him right now, but he is playing better from a fantasy perspective. He's got a pretty easy schedule going forward. Meanwhile, Jarvis Landry finds the end zone again. That is three straight times for him, but let's talk about Odell Beckham. You've been pretty, you know, strident in keeping him up there in your rankings. He does get the 10 targets, just 4 for 60, but he had two almost touchdowns, one right out of the gate where he had that long catch where he was down at the one, the other one where he almost got his second foot in. This begins, again, the not terrible part of this schedule. Are you encouraged, discouraged, or encouraged by this game for Beckham?
I mean, like half a yard and people would be looking at this game a little bit differently. And even that first play of the game, you know, that one, like that touchdown. So I'm like, I told people this the other week with Sam Darnold. I said, you know, Sam Darnold against the Dolphins, you know, be like, oh, you said to start him. I'm like, well, if we take away one play in that game, it goes from 12 fantasy points to like 19 fantasy points. So that's just the swings that we have in the NFL sometimes. But Beckham, based on his targets, his air yards, his quality of targets, like where they're coming from, he has actually scored 26 fewer PPR points than expected. That's something that's going to correct itself with elite playmakers. And Beckham, I do consider him an elite playmaker. And knowing that he continues to get more and more volume from Mayfield, knowing that they're getting weapons back in the offense with Kareem Hunt, they're going to be getting David Njoku back maybe this week. So Beckham is someone I am absolutely buying. The schedule is good. Three of the next four games, he's going to be playing against the Dolphins, the Bengals, and the Cardinals. So it's like, do you want him on the opponent's team and watching him go off, or do you want him on your team? So the answer is my team. So yeah, I still have Beckham ranked as a top 12 receiver for the remainder of the season.
I think that's fair. Now, you mentioned Kareem Hunt, so let's talk a little bit about this running game. Nick Chubb sees 27 carries, just 92 yards, no catches. Meanwhile, Kareem Hunt, 6 carries for 12 yards, but he has 6 catches on 8 targets for 46 yards. Look, Chubb played 72% of the snaps, Hunt 55% of the snaps. So they're on the field a lot together, which I think is part of the reason, actually, that the offense looks a little better right now. But out of curiosity, how do you feel about these two backs? I mean, again, the one thing I noticed, Hunt didn't get a touchdown or anything, but he was in on the goal line on a couple of those carries. So it made me a little nervous as a Chubb owner.
Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking with Chubb, and I said to sell him before Chubb was Hunt was coming back because I was worried about that. I was worried about that he was going to lose his ceiling, and not being involved as much in the passing game, he is losing some of that ceiling, and if he doesn't score a touchdown, it's going to hurt. I almost put him in the sell column again after this game, and I was like, no, I can't. I just talked about the schedule. They're going to be playing against Miami, and they're going to play against the Steelers again, then Cincinnati, then Arizona, and it's like, okay, we can't sell Nick Chubb because like he's someone that's due for touchdowns, and it's like those are the games where it's probably going to come, so you can't really sell him right now. You kind of have to live with the ups and the downs. I have him as a low-end RB1 moving forward. Kareem Hunt is in the flex conversation most weeks. I can't really see that changing, so I mean, it's still like a 65-35 split, but it definitely caps the upside for Nick Chubb.
Yeah, I mean, look, I was willing to accept, you know, Chubb was losing some of the passing down work before Hunt even came aboard. So I was willing to accept that that was what was going to happen, especially when Hunt came on. But it does worry me a little bit about him, you know, just seeing Hunt in there at the goal line. And he's not running poorly right now. He does look rested. So I'm slightly concerned about it, but not enough. Again, Chubb's an RB1. He gets the volume, of course. So he's certainly staying in that mix, but it, you know, this has been a little bit more of an impact than I think I anticipated. Let's go on to the other side of the ball, and honestly, I'm not really sure there's all that much for us to talk about here from breaking down the game. I mean, there's a lot to talk about, but I think it's probably going to be mostly for you and Bobby on the waiver wire show. You've got Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson leaving with concussions. You've got James Conner re-aggravating his shoulder injury, despite the fact that he was not listed on the injury report for this game, so that was a little crazy. They've got the Bengals next week. I guess let's just say assume that Connor is not going to play, which I think is probably a fair assumption at this point. Where are you ranking either Jalen Samuels or Trey Edmonds?
Do I have to?
I won't hold you to it, I promise.
I mean, knowing that Samuels is involved in the passing game and knowing the wide receivers are dealing with so many issues, I'll probably say he's going to be in the RB2 conversation this week. Like low-end RB2, but man, this team is just brutal. You just don't want to attach yourself to it as much as you can. You know, we didn't want to do it before. And like when I went through the rest of season rankings with this, I'm really torn on Smith-Schuster. I almost put him in like drop territory. I have him down at wide receiver 40 moving forward. I'm out. Like, I'm just done. It's almost like the Jets where it's like you don't want to trust any wide receiver from this group.
Yeah, I have been debating it every week. You know, again, I create the trade chart, so I really need to focus on this trade value. I haven't struggled with anyone right now as much as I have with Smith-Schuster because he's so talented. There'll be the occasional game where you'd be like, there it is. They've got it. You know, that game against Miami, of course. But then it's just not happening. I agree. I don't see how you can start him with any remote level of confidence at this point. I mean, if you've got him, I guess you hold him. But yeah, if I saw him on the waiver wire, I'm really not sure I would be all that jazzed to go pick him up. But I agree. It's kind of a mess right now, as that entire game was. Let's move on to today's games. And let's start with the Cowboys 35, Lions 27. A good game for pretty much everyone here on the Cowboys other than Amari Cooper. Prescott throws for 444 yards and 3 touchdowns. Ezekiel Elliott, only 73 total yards, but he does score 2 touchdowns. Michael Gallup, meanwhile, sees 13 targets, catches 9 of them for 148 yards. Randall Cobb gets 115 yards in the score. Even Tony Pollard finds the end zone. It was really just Cooper, just 8 targets, 3 catches, 38 yards. I'm not really sure there are any big takeaways here for the Cowboys tags, but let me know what you think.
Zeke wasn't very good. I mean, like, I know he scored that touchdown, that receiving touchdown, but without that, he would have been bad. Like, his longest run of the day was 8 yards against a Lions team that's really struggled against the run. I moved him outside of my top 5 running backs moving forward. I know it doesn't really matter in terms of, like, I'm going to be starting him every single week, but it's like removing that upside. He has still yet to have a game this year where he's finished as a top 3 running back. It's just a weird year for him, and it's not working out. Michael Gallup played like a boss. That was like the biggest, and it's the biggest takeaway from this game, but it wasn't really surprising because Amari Cooper was going to be tied up with Darius Slay. Slay is one of the better shadow cornerbacks in the league. Amari, I figured, would still have production. I think that's my biggest surprise here, is that he did see 8 targets. Dak throws for 3 touchdowns, 444 yards, but knowing that Amari ends up with just 3 catches for 38 is a bit surprising, but I don't take too much away from it. Again, it was a matchup with Darius Slay. It was good to see Gallup, you know, get the production he did. The biggest surprise outside of Cooper was Randall Cobb. I don't think he's very good, but knowing that Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper get as much attention as they do, he just kind of produces.
Out of curiosity, where's Gallup right now in your rest of season rankings? Without holding you to it, he was 32 before this comment. He was an honorary what's your problem, man. I didn't put him in, but he was honorary because I thought you were a little too low on him.
Yeah, I have him at 28 now. So I mean, like, I've moved him up a bit. It seemed like there was going to be a little inconsistency there, but knowing that Amari's dealing with the knee issue and everything like that, like, it's always a possibility that Amari, they have to sit him for a game. They're like, we have to rest him and just get him right. And Gallup becomes the number one receiver. And it's like, then all of a sudden it's like, wow, we're looking at a top 15 play every single week. So that has to be built into his projection too. So I guess we could say move him up higher. Honestly, I might, because I haven't moved Robert Woods down. I don't know. So news came through, like, legit right as we were recording this show, that Robert Woods is going to be inactive for the game tonight against the Bears, which I haven't seen the reason why. Again, it literally popped up on our screens where we don't know what's going on with it.
It says it's a personal issue tags. That's what I'm seeing right now per Rappaport. So
non-injury related, but yeah, whatever the case is, I guess you could say Gallup probably belongs maybe around 25. It just depends on how you feel about the receivers ahead of them and their health. Like I said, with Woods, with guys like T.Y. Hilton, guys like Emmanuel Sanders, that's the conversation I put Gallup in.
Yeah, no, I had him at 25 coming in. That's around where it'll be. He'll probably move up a couple of spots, but I agree. I think that's around where he needs to be. On the other side of the ball, we talked about Jones already. We touched on Galladay, but, you know, 5 targets, 1 catch for 34 yards here. Last week, 9 targets, just 3 catches for 57 yards. Again, most of it on one late catch, just like this time. Assume Driscoll is the starter for the foreseeable future. They've got matchups coming up against the Redskins, the Bears, the Vikings. Not the worst schedule overall, but not the best or anything. How do you feel about Galladay so long as Driscoll is there? Is he still a decent wide receiver too, or are you really nervous here?
I'm somewhat nervous, again, because Driscoll isn't gravitating towards him. He's going to, you know, Danny Amendola quite a bit. Marvin Jones appears to be his favorite target. Whenever Kenny Golladay goes into a matchup, most of the time he's going to see the number one cornerback. And the remainder of the schedule doesn't look that bad in terms of, like, Washington doesn't shadow, Chicago doesn't shadow. He's going to see the Vikings again. The Vikings are not a team to run away from, even though they did hold him to one catch for 21 yards in the first meeting. Tampa Bay, and then week 16 is brutal. That's where it's like, okay, is he considered the number one? Because if he's considered the number one, he's going to get Chris Harris. And that's always been the concern with Golladay. I'm not going to, like, overreact to this, like, because I thought Dallas was a brutal matchup. It just so happens that Marvin Jones got the production. But I have Golladay still as a top 18 wide receiver for the rest of the season. I'm not going to overly panic. I was never too high on him to begin with, but I'm not going to, like, move him into wide receiver three territory or anything like that.
Real quick on the running game here, it was all Bo Scarborough tags, 14 carries for 55 yards and a score. Ty Johnson active here, just 2 carries. J.D. McKissic, 3 carries. I'm sure you'll talk about it a little bit on your waiver wire show, but just out of curiosity, do you think that Bo Scarborough is somebody that fantasy owner next week that fantasy owners are going to be able to start?
Oh, be able to start him confidently? Probably not. I mean, it was tough because Ty Johnson was activated late in the week, but if I was projecting one of them moving forward as the starting running back, I guess it would have to be Scarborough. And against Washington, it's a game where they should be able to run the ball, so I guess, yeah. I mean, he'll probably be in, like, the RB3 conversation. He's not a pass catcher. He actually looked better today than I thought he did back at Alabama. I remember watching him at Alabama and thinking, this guy is just, like, a product of the system. He's not very good. But Detroit, it's not a team that runs the ball a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of touches to go around, so he's not exciting. But if you need a body through the final bye week, it's actually week 12 is the final week that has any teams on bye. So if you need a running back for then, he could fill that role.
All right, let's move on to the Colts 33, Jaguars 13. A big thing here is the Marlon Mack injury. I believe it is now a fractured hand, and he is out indefinitely. I'm not sure, you know, frankly, whether that means the rest of the season, whether it means a few games, whether or not they need to really think about how long it's going to be. He was great when he was in, 14 carries for 109 yards and a score. Now, Jordan Wilkins was inactive for this game, so it wasn't him, but instead Jonathan Williams who stepped in, and he also ran well with 13 carries for 116 yards. Nyheim Hines also finds the end zone. So obviously this is going to be something that you and Bobby are going to talk about on the waiver wire show. So Bobby has already threatened me, essentially, if I steal too much of the waiver wire show on Sunday night. He said he's going to make me eat something with artichokes in it, and I just refuse to do that. So on the passing side for the Colts, there's not all that much exciting here. Jacoby Brissett, just 148 yards passing, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. The touchdown goes to Marcus Johnson, who is your leading receiver with 38 yards and a touchdown. The biggest thing here that I saw essentially was that Jack Doyle doesn't even see a target. Anything here on the Colts passing side, or should we move on?
No, I mean, Zach Pascal is somebody that people are going to drop and move on from, but he plays on Thursday night against the Texans, and that's a game they're going to have to throw the ball a little bit. So Jonathan Williams will be somebody that, you know, is going to be a popular waiver wire pickup, but he's a 2-down back similar to Marlon Mack. And Mack, I mean, he's finished as a top 12 running back, I think, once this year. I mean, if we count, I don't even know if he got there this week leaving the game, but it was only just one time. So basically he's been like an RB2. So Jonathan Williams in a negative game script against the Texans on Thursday night, I mean, he's probably going to be in like the high end RB3 territory. So Pascal is somebody that I think that can have some post-hype buzz where it's like the matchup is finally good against Houston. So, I mean, we don't know if T.Y. Hilton's going to be back. I'm guessing not. So I would say Pascal is somebody that I would keep an eye on, even though he did have a terrible game here. He did lead the team with 6 targets.
All right. On the other side of the ball, I think we pretty much broke it all down when we talked about DJ Chark. We mentioned Leonard Fournette. Doesn't get a lot of volume on the ground, just 23 yards. He does save his day in PPR formats with 7 catches for 34 yards, and that D.D. Westbrook didn't have a great game. I think we could just move on here if you're good with that.
Well, yeah, it's almost like the Jaguars like just said, you know, Leonard Fournette, we don't need to run the ball. Like, they were only down 10-7 at halftime, so it's not like it was a blowout. Play calling was terrible.
Yeah, it's very strange. One of these things when you see, which happens on occasion where you're like, I don't understand why not even make the attempt to run the ball, especially when you have Fournette. So very strange game here. But anyway, before we get to the next game, I want to remind everyone that we are giving away a signed Dak Prescott helmet over at fantasypros.com/contest. You can get all the details there, but to be entered, just leave a review for the show in Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and send a screenshot of that review to contest@fantasypros.com. That signed Dak Prescott helmet comes from our good friends over at Pristine Auction. And you surely know about them by now. It's where you should be going whenever you are looking to buy sports memorabilia or any kind, really nearly anything at all whatsoever. If you listened to us all year, you heard me tell the story about the Toy Story display with the original film clips that I got from my daughter, or the Julian Edelman signed helmet that I got from my son, or the Mike Piazza autographed picture that I put under my pillow every single night. They've got hundreds and even thousands of auctions every single day where you can bid on a ton of great items. And because there are so many auctions, you get amazing deals. Yesterday, I saw a signed DeAndre Hopkins jersey for $68.80 and an Odell Beckham signed football for $74.94. The signed Hopkins jersey, the signed Beckham football, every item at Pristine Auction is guaranteed from only the most trusted sources. It is free to register and free to bid, and you only pay money when you win an item. So go to pristineauction.com. That's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. And use our promo code FANTASYPROS in the registration field when you sign up. You'll get a free $5, and that lets them know that you heard about them from us. And that's basically why we're able to do things like the Dak Prescott helmet giveaway. All right, Tags, let's go here to Vikings 27, Broncos 23. The Broncos led 20-0 at halftime, so that is a really tough loss for them. For the Vikings, Dalvin Cook, only 11 rushing attempts, and he's bottled up for just 26 yards. He does have 31 receiving yards, and he does find the end zone to save his day, but Stephon Diggs, I don't know if he was targeted in the first half at all, but catches all five of his targets for 121 yards and a touchdown. Not all of it came against Chris Harris Jr., but still, Kyle Rudolph catches a touchdown pass and has 67 yards. Kirk Cousins winds up with 319 yards passing and 3 touchdown total. Stephon Diggs may be my favorite player, but how are you feeling generally about the Vikings offense here, Tex?
It almost seems like teams are just saying Kirk Cousins beat us. We're not going to allow Dalvin Cook to beat us. And Dalvin Cook has suffered a little bit because of that. And Kirk Cousins has continually done it. You know, he completes 29 of 35 passes in this game against Denver, a team that had been like legitimately shut down against quarterbacks. Like, I wanted no part of Kirk Cousins this week. So kudos to him. He's the one who deserves the most respect in this game. Like, Diggs getting done, you know, catching all five targets for 121 yards and a touchdown in a matchup against Chris Harris Jr., by the way, who had shut down legitimately every wide receiver he's played. Every number one that goes against him, it's kind of ridiculous, actually. So Diggs, I had him as like a low-end wide receiver too this week, saying that you kind of had to play him with how talented he is. So it's nice to see him, you know, kind of go off. But they're going into their bye week. Adam Thielen's going to be back, which means Kyle Rudolph is going to go back to a somewhat boring role. I think a lot of people are going to be wanting to pick him up off the waiver wire after, you know, he's had, I think it's 3 good performances in a row now, and it all comes down to is Adam Thielen playing, because if you go back to when Thielen was on the field, Rudolph just wasn't targeted in this offense.
No, that's absolutely correct. He is certainly someone who you can start, you know, as that low-end starter whenever Thielen's not in, but when Thielen is there, no, we've seen it for now for 2 years. You really don't want any part of it, but it is nice to see him have a good game, and I agree. Diggs, you know, it was one of the guys who I'm like, man, I really don't want to rank him where I am even, but you kind of have to with these guys, and it was great to see him come up huge in that game. So look, we talked mostly about the Broncos because we talked somewhat about Brandon Allen. We talked about Cortland Sutton, but there was this report before the game that Phillip Lindsay was going to see a little more work, and he did. He plays on 42 snaps, Royce Freeman just 20 of them, and the production is roughly split about that way. 16 carries for 67 yards plus 2 catches for Lindsay. Freeman sees only 8 carries for 31 yards with 1 catch. So 2 things here, Tech. First, is the gap between Freeman and Lindsay just in your rankings going to widen after this? And should we be concerned that Brandon Allen simply does not target his running backs anymore?
Yes, it is a real concern that he doesn't target them as much. There are certain quarterbacks that just check down a lot more than others do, and it seems like he likes Noah Fant an awful lot. That's something to watch going forward. Obviously, you know, they target Cortland Sutton in the offense quite a bit, but yeah, seeing Lindsay get 18 touches to Royce Freeman's 9 touches, that's a thing to watch going forward. And I was looking at the schedule. There's not too much to fear here, so I did move Phillip Lindsay up to my number 17 running back rest of season, and I have Royce Freeman down at the number 30 running back rest of the season.
Yeah, no, I can't argue with any of that. Again, Freeman's, you know, damage mostly came in his ability to catch passes. He was always sort of somebody who was good for a floor of 5 targets, usually 4 catches, but without that right now. And again, we don't actually know that Allen's going to start, of course, for the rest of the season. That remains to be seen. But in the end, certainly Freeman is not a guy who you can start with any confidence, and it does look like they want to feature Lindsay a little bit. So I agree moving him up. Ravens 41, Texans 7. The Ravens are getting really scary here, Tags. Lamar Jackson throws 4 touchdown passes. He rushes for 86 yards. 2 of those touchdown passes go to noted PPR threat Mark Ingram, who rushes for just 48 yards, but obviously saves his day with those. Mark Andrews leads all receivers with 75 yards, also scores a touchdown. Hollywood Brown continues to battle through injuries. There was a report right before the game that he's not 100% held in check here, but anything we can say other than always start Lamar Jackson, Mark Ingram, and Mark Andrews and just enjoy the ride?
I cannot say. There's so many people in my mentions this past week with Lamar Jackson saying you're a hater and this and that, and someone said, are you convinced to call him MVP candidate now? And I said, when did I ever say he's not an MVP candidate? I never said that. Literally never said that. The conversation that you and I had, Dan, last week was about Marquise Brown and saying that Lamar Jackson's hit or miss in the deep ball. That's what I said, and that still remains true. Lamar Jackson, he started out the game somewhat slow, but then he completed. There was a section of the game where it seemed like he just couldn't miss. Lamar Jackson, he is a clear-cut MVP candidate, and with the way that the Ravens defense is playing right now, this team is a legitimate Super Bowl contender. With the way that we're seeing Tom Brady slow down a bit, we obviously seen the Ravens beat them. It was one game. It wasn't in the playoffs where Tom Brady just excels and defies everything. But Lamar Jackson is absolutely an MVP candidate. You put him in your lineup no matter what. You play him in DFS if you can fit him in your lineup. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts. And I do want to say that Mark Ingram played a hell of a game. I didn't think Mark Ingram was capable of some of the moves that he pulled off today. But I watched a lot of that game because it was a game I didn't expect many fireworks, to be honest with you. I had the under in that game. The over-under on that one, I think, was 51.5, and I had the under because I felt like the way that Baltimore's defense is playing and the way they matched up with Houston, that they would defend them really well. But Mark Ingram,
And look, to be fair, I do want to say one of the touchdown catches that he had was there was nobody within 20 yards of him at this point. It was just a well-designed play where everybody was going one way and Ingram was open the other way. But yeah, look, he's had an extremely solid year. And Jackson, yeah, again, look, I'll just stick from the fantasy perspective at this point. I saw all the Twitter beef that went back and forth, but really, in the end, regardless, nobody can argue that Jackson is just a miraculous fantasy quarterback for the floor that he gives you with his legs. But he's obviously 4 touchdown passes today. He's also doing it with his arm. So it's just fun to watch. Just one note, you're going to see, if you didn't watch the game, you'll see in the box score, Gus Edwards, 8 carries for 112 yards and a score. Most of that came in just garbage time. There's nothing to really be concerned about with Ingram, who, as we talked about, looked good and scored the 2 touchdowns. On the other side of the ball, nobody really looked good for the Texans. Carlos Hyde does get loose for the long touchdown run, winds up with 9 carries for 65 yards. And DeAndre Hopkins sees 12 targets, catches 7 of them for 80 yards, but Deshaun Watson got really beat up here. He had an awful day, 169 yards and a pick, just 12 yards rushing. Is this just a bad day at the office here with an improving and very, very good Ravens defense, or do we have major concerns here with the Texans?
No, it was just a bad matchup for them. Deshaun Watson took 6 sacks, but he's to blame for part of them. He just holds onto the ball too long. He's someone that needs to learn to check down a little bit more. And I'm not going to sit here and critique the guy over and over, because I do feel like he's obviously done a good job playing the position, but I feel like he can be better. And I feel like this is one area of the game where it's stop holding onto the ball so long. Find your options, and if they're not open, he was almost he wasn't going to run the ball. He was just dancing around the pocket and buying time for defenders to come and smash him. And that's what's going to get him hurt. He was actually hurt at one point in this game. But Watson, it's more about him and getting it right. I do think he bounces back. I think he's playing on Thursday night against the Colts. That should be a big bounce back game for him. So I'm not panicking on him. It's just a matter of him growing, as a quarterback.
All right, let's move on to the unstoppable Jets, 34, Redskins, 17. Sam Darnold, 293 yards and 4 touchdown passes, 1 each to Ryan Griffin, Jameson Crowder, Robbie Anderson, and Daniel Brown. Tags, let's talk about Crowder quickly. 8 targets, 5 catches, 76 yards, at least 6 targets, 5 catches, 76 yards, and a score in each of his last 3 games. He's got to be at least a wide receiver 3 now in half PPR formats, right?
Yeah, I think you could say that. I mean, he offers you a solid floor most weeks. It's just, it's really rough. It's so difficult to put him over some of the guys that I have in the top 36. So I don't have him ranked as a top 36 wide receiver, but most weeks you're going to be able to consider him as a wide receiver 3. I just have my worries about the offense in general. It's is Robbie Anderson ever going to get involved? You know what I mean? Sam Darnold's not going to throw touchdowns every single week, but they do have a good they have a good schedule. I mean, they're going to play Oakland, Cincinnati, Miami over the next 3 weeks, and then it's Baltimore and Pittsburgh, which is a lot tougher. But I mean, it's tough to say that Jameson Crowder doesn't belong in that conversation. I mean, it's 3 straight weeks now where he's at over 70 yards, I think it is. So 3 straight weeks with a touchdown. So you're a Jets guy. And this is where I'm going to defer to you and to talk about this receiver core. Going forward, is Robbie Anderson droppable? I know he caught a touchdown, but I said he was droppable last week, that I can't trust him. Demaryius Thomas obviously gets targeted quite a bit, but Jameson Crowder, what do you do with these guys going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Crowder is a wide receiver 3 going forward in anything that gives you any remote you know, in a half PPR league, for example, or certainly in a full PPR league. But I think he's reliable. I mean, I think when you're talking wide receiver three, you don't care that much about like, well, this guy's never going to give me that monster game that's going to win me a week. Who cares? He's going to give you a pretty high floor. We've talked all about the schedule, how good it is. Anderson, look, I continue to hold out hope for Anderson, but just, you know, he did catch a touchdown. That's his only catch today. He certainly is droppable. I have dropped him in a league. Demaryius Thomas, you know, no, just no interest in. I get it. He'll probably put up, you know, decent games like he has for the most part in the past. But the only guy for me in the passing game that you want to own right now is Crowder. While I still think there's going to be a boom Robbie Anderson game at some point, there's no reason to wait around for it. But let's talk about running game here. Le'Veon Bell, 18 for 59 with a touchdown plus two catches for 33 yards. Here's the thing, Tex. Bilal Powell got seven carries. Bell's yardage is down. He still averaged more than 4 yards per carry just one game this whole season. He's currently saving his value with touchdowns. Are you concerned here?
Yes. I was always concerned with Le'Veon Bell. It's the reason that I going back to draft season, it's one of those things where it's like we look back on and I'm like, okay, the process was right there. There's plenty of things that we get wrong. You know, I hate to say like, oh, I look back and I'm like, you always want to call it your good things. And I'm one that points out my bad things most of the time because it's like something I need to learn from. But this is one of those things that was almost predictable, right? He plays behind a terrible offensive line. He's a patient runner. The offense was never going to be very potent. There's just a whole lot of things wrong with it. But Le'Veon Bell, he's still a top tier back, but just on a terrible team that doesn't score very much. So yeah, I am worried about it. Knowing that he's been battling through a knee injury, knowing that he played through like a sickness this week, I'm just worried about Le'Veon Bell and like where the Jets are. It's almost like if something's bothering him, he might just be like, yeah, I can't play this week.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, given his past, absolutely. But the fact is, you know, bottom line is, I mean, my expectations for him keep going down, but he's still obviously someone that so long as he's out there, particularly given the schedule, you're starting him each and every week, right? I mean, he's certainly at that level.
Yeah, I mean, I have him as a high-end RB2 in my ranking, so yeah, he's definitely startable.
All right, on the other side of the ball, Dwayne Haskins throws two touchdown passes, both of them late in garbage time, one to Darius Geis, one to Jeremy Sprinkle. Terry McLaurin, meanwhile, gets a pass ball, four targets, three catches for 69 yards, plus he had a very long catch that was called back on a penalty. How do things look here, Tags, for you in the first game where Haskins, off the bye, had time to prepare with a Dwayne Haskins-led Redskins offense?
Gross. I mean, Terry McLaurin is stuck in juju territory right now, where it's like these guys are just so talented. And Terry McLaurin, like if you're towards the, you know, if you're in a dynasty league and some people are like, you know, Haskins is going to be the future of this organization, he's tied to McLaurin, I would be buying low on Terry McLaurin. Like, he's too talented. And if the Redskins, I truly believe that the reason that they said that they're going to start Haskins the rest of the year is because they're going to decide whether or not they're going to draft another quarterback. Is it right or wrong? I don't know. Haskins is someone that was going to take some time and some development. He only started, you know, so many games in college, 1 year as a full-time starter. So it was going to take some time for developing. It hasn't looked great so far, but McLaurin clearly frustrated. He caught a long pass towards the end of the game. It was like a 40-yard pass. He spiked the ball like it was a touchdown, but it obviously wasn't. It was just more like, thank you for throwing me the ball. He only had four targets today. It's upsetting.
Yeah. No, I dropped him pretty significantly. Coming into this game, I can't trust anything so long as Haskins is there. So it's certainly something to be worried about with McLaurin. But at this point, I think fantasy owners have kind of realized that at this point. I don't think they're holding on to him as sort of the wide receiver two that we had all kind of moved him up to a few weeks back. Let's move on to the Falcons 29, Panthers 3. I'll be honest, Tags, I did not peg this second half Falcons resurgence whatsoever. I sort of thought that they had quit long ago, but kudos to them and kudos to Dan Quinn, who somehow did not get fired and has the team playing hard. We already talked about Brian Hill, so let's talk about Calvin Ridley here. Big game, catches all eight of his targets for 143 yards and a touchdown. Tags, kudos to you. I checked our rest of season rankings. This would have been a what's your problem, man, for me. You had him 17th going forward coming into this game. So you were obviously buying this performance. So we've got no Mohamed Sanu and now no Austin Hooper. Is Ridley going to be this rock solid wide receiver option going forward?
You have to think, like, I had him in wide receiver two territory and nothing has changed with that. Like, I still have him in that wide receiver two territory. Like, I would struggle to choose between Calvin Ridley and someone like DJ Moore or Adam Thielen, because these are guys that are not going to see the double digit target games a lot, because it's like, either one, they have a run first offense, or two, they have a number one receiver like a Julio Jones that's going to steal a lot of the targets. But with Hooper out, with Sanu gone, with Devonta Freeman dealing with an injury, there's a lot of factors that kind of led into Calvin Ridley seeing more targets. And is that going to happen more going forward? I would assume so. I don't know what to think of the Falcons defense. Like, these were two divisional games. So divisional games are always a little bit difficult to judge because there's some crazy things that can happen. So this is like, if you're a betting person, like, never like take for granted a division game, because the coaches put so much more into them. The teams know each other that much better. And then next week they're going to go against Tampa Bay, a team that they should crush. And then it's back to New Orleans, and then it's Carolina again. So we have three more division games in a row for them. These teams know each other extremely well. There's a lot of outcomes with this, but I don't know if I say that the Falcons defense is all of a sudden like a team that you avoid. It could have just been like a short 2-week sample size and they just played well against a divisional opponent. But Calvin Ridley should be locked into 6+ targets a week. He's uber talented, and Julio Jones is always going to see it's the number one cornerback on the other team. So a wide receiver too, I will live with him there.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch, frankly. I mean, I've been a big Ridley fan pretty much his whole career, so it's nice to see it sort of coming to fruition. At least, you know, now late in the week, it might have taken some injuries to some other pass catchers, but it's good to see it as of now. As for the Panthers, like, it's really nice in a game, even where the team does absolutely nothing, that Christian McCaffrey can still find his way to 191 total yards, even though he doesn't find the end zone. DJ Moore sees 15 targets, hauls in 8 of them for 95 yards. If he could just find the end zone, he would be an absolutely dominant wide receiver. Kyle Allen's 4 interceptions here, though, dooms the team. Any thoughts here on the Panthers? Any takeaways?
Christian McCaffrey finishes the RB1 this week by like almost a full 7 points in PPR formats, despite not scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, just not stupid. Normal. He's just too good. Yeah, no, look, I mean, that's good enough for me, frankly. You know, in the end, he's really just playing on a completely different level.
So, Dan, real quick. So when Cam Newton went to IR, I said in the primer, I was like, one of two things can happen, because there's two different types of people in this world, right? People that rise to the challenge when they're in competition, right? And then there's others that almost get comfortable in the position they're in without competition. I'm like, we haven't seen Kyle Allen without competition. And now that Cam Newton's on IR, like, which way does he go? This is a week, like, it was bad enough to the point where Kyle Allen would get benched for Cam Newton. Like, he would go back to the bench and Cam would have come back. Like, do you believe in that sort of thing where it's like some people are just better when someone's breathing down their neck?
So I do believe in that thing, but I'm not convinced that that's what's happening here. I think in the end that Kyle Allen just really is not that good. That's honestly what I think. I mean, I hate to be, you know, sort of so blunt about it, but I just don't think he's a particularly good quarterback. I think in the end, Carolina is a pretty good team and people didn't really know what to expect. And in the end, if you could just be quasi accurate with the team, when you have the best running back in the league, you have a defense that was improving. You know, the pass defense was good. The run defense had started to get better. Now it's coming back down to earth. He was able to do it just by being a game manager, and it looked better than it was because Newton had been terrible. I honestly just think that in the end, Kyle Allen is not that good and he's getting a bit exposed here, but it certainly could be some of the, you know, a little bit like, hey, I've got it locked up, maybe I can take my foot off the gas. But I'll go with my theory over that one. Let's move on to Bills 37, Dolphins 20. All right, tags. Denver, Dallas, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, New England. That is the upcoming schedule for the Bills. What do you do if you're a Josh Allen owner? 258 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, plus 56 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Can you start him with confidence in those matchups going forward?
I'm going to say you go the streaming route with him. You play him in good matchups. You sit him in others. I think he's playable against Dallas. I would not want to play him against Denver if I could help it. Wouldn't want to play him against Baltimore. That team is just reeling right now. Pittsburgh's a tough matchup. New England. Wow, that I did not realize how bad his schedule was. Like, I know you said it, and then I kind of like pulled it up and looked at it, and I'm like, ew, yeah, I can't see much upside there. I know he's been running the ball a bit more recently, you know, racking up some rushing yardage, but it's probably the reason, and I should have correlated this too, is that John Brown is someone that I'll talk about in the podcast tomorrow during our buy-sell segment. I think John Brown is one of the sells. Like, I would get rid of him right now because I was looking at his upcoming schedule, and I didn't really tie it to Josh Allen for whatever reason, but yeah, I would stream the position rather than, maybe you could trade Josh Allen for Jameis Winston right now.
Yeah, Brown with a huge game, by the way. 14 targets, 9 catches, 137 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's a rock solid wide receiver too. He has been for a while, but this game is certainly a little bit, you know, out of character for him given what he's been doing. But again, I'm glad I'm not an Allen owner because I don't want to have to be faced with the choice of being like, man, how do I bench this guy? But with that schedule, I feel like he's going to fall outside of my starting quarterbacks when I do my rankings each and every week. Let's briefly talk about Devin Singletary here. 15 carries, 75 yards. He does not find the end zone. He also fumbles twice, though he does not lose either. Real quick, sum up your thoughts here on Devin Singletary.
Sell before you can't. Again, we just talked about the remaining schedule for that team. Like when it matters most, he's not going to do you any good. That's the issue, right? Is because you're not going to want to play him in the fantasy playoffs against Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and New England. Those are all terrible matchups. Legit. So like that's the thing in fantasy football, right? Like the trade deadlines are coming up and you're going to have to decide on these players what you want to do. And if you want to win a fantasy championship, you have to attack the matchups. Knowing this, like what we know, and knowing that they're still going to involve Frank Gore to a certain degree, I'm selling Devin Singletary right now. Like, for as much as I possibly can.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to disagree here. You know, it's been now two games where you've kind of wanted the matchups don't get much better than this. And again, with that schedule, it's just not something that I'm overly excited about. So, you know, again, 15 for 75, 5 yards per carry. You can sell that. Maybe go ahead and get rid of them. On the other side of the ball, we talked about Kalen Ballage, 9 yards on 9 carries, does find the end zone, and 5 catches for 8 yards. That is what Kalen Ballage is. Devontae Parker, you talked about how he's very reliable. Indeed, 10 targets, 7 catches, 135 yards. Ryan Fitzpatrick has the very odd 0 touchdown, 0 turnover day against the tough Bills defense. Any thoughts here on the Dolphins, or just we can move on?
Gross. Devontae Parker in a tough matchup, too. You know what's crazy is that, like, so my rankings in the DFS optimizer, in terms of, like, I could take my rankings and say, I want to put them in the DFS optimizer and tell me who the best plays are. I had Devontae Parker spitting out in there multiple times, and I kept Xing him out. I'm like, no, I'm not playing Parker this week. And I'm a Parker fan, but I was like, I don't want to play him this week. And I should have listened.
I mean, he's just been remarkably consistent going forward. So just what, solid wide receiver 3 for you going forward?
That's what he is.
Good enough for me, too. Now, look, I watched this game closely because I was all over the Bills laying 6.5 points to the Dolphins here, which you would have heard had you listened to the Betting Pros NFL podcast that I host. You can find it over at bettingpros.com/podcast, or just search for Betting Pros NFL in Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And it's a good time. We do 2 shows a week. One drops on Monday night where we give our early impression of the lines. The other on Thursday night where we give some of our best bets, like the Bills over the Dolphins, for example. So if you subscribe tomorrow night, you're going to hear me and a guest looking at every single game on the Week 12 slate, and we'll give you our thoughts about the game generally and also on the opening lines. Also, you can win a signed Odell Beckham Jr. helmet if you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher and send a screenshot of that review to contest@bettingpros.com. So just go over, give it a listen. It's a good time, I promise. All right, let's move on to Saints 34, Bucks 17. Drew Brees bounces back here, 3 touchdown passes, 1 each to Michael Thomas, Jared Cook, and Ted Ginn Jr. Meanwhile, Alvin Kamara catches all 10 of his targets, just 47 yards, but he does add 75 yards on the ground, and he has a touchdown pulled off the board. 4 straight dome games coming up here, Tex. Can we forget last week's disaster entirely and feel confident in Brees and Kamara going forward? Obviously, you're starting Michael Thomas as the number one wide receiver, in my opinion, but Brees and Kamara going forward, no worries?
Yep, and by Latavius Murray. Before, I mean, like, so this was a tough matchup. It was always going to be a tough matchup, but knowing that he had 10 carries and Kamara had 13, they're going to be mix and match in terms of like what they're doing on first and second down. Murray, I mean, even Latavius had three targets in this game, so he's involved a little bit there. If you're getting a running back in that Saints offense that's going to get 10 to 12 touches per week, you're going to play him as a flex more often than not. And again, he also comes with, like, if Kamara were to miss any time at all, Murray's a league winner, so I'm buying him right now. If you can get him, like, maybe go to his owner and, like, don't attack him, like, directly, and just say, and include him in a combo deal. Be like, here, throw in Latavius Murray for me, and do it that way. And by the way, Dan, before I forget, going back to your Jets, Ryan Griffin, is he what people wanted Chris Herndon to be? Because, like, seriously, like, the guy is putting up numbers continually. Maybe it's Darnold just loves the tight end. But Griffin is doing more than even Chris Herndon did last year.
No, absolutely. Look, I jumped over him because, again, the way I kind of feel about, I mentioned he caught a touchdown pass, but I jumped over him a little bit because I feel like tight end from the fantasy position, you've really got the top 7 or 8 if Ingram's going to play. And those are really the only guys who are absolutely reliable. But, you know, once you get past that, if you're just somebody who's like, man, I miss every time on these streamers, it's just not going well for me, I think Griffin certainly is going to break into that top 12. And he is a guy who you can start. Darnold looks for him in the end zone. I think he's a guy who's going to put up more often than not pretty solid production. And so is he Chris Herndon? You know, I don't think he's as talented as Chris Herndon, but do I think that he's basically filling that role a little bit Herndon light? Yeah, I do. So if you're struggling at tight end, he's a guy who I think you can probably plug in there given the matchups, although he's certainly not, you know, in that vein of guys who you can definitely feel totally fine about starting each and every week. Murray's a great call, by the way, because I bet his owners after the last 2 games are just like, forget it. I'm never going to feel comfortable starting Murray. So he's a guy who you can do without letting the other owner know, as you said, Tags, that you're actually targeting him. On the other side of the ball, just a terrible game all around here for the Bucks. Winston, 313 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He was also limping kind of at the end of that game there. So one of those interceptions, as I sort of alluded to early on, not really his fault. OJ Howard essentially gives the ball away. Just 16 snaps for Howard. Tags basically benched after that horrific play. Meanwhile, Cameron Braid had 50 snaps, 14 targets, 10 catches, 73 yards. Even you, Tags, who have defended the OJ Howard castle like you are Gandalf the White, have to admit that the Howard experiment for 2019 has to be over, right?
I'm out. I did it, man. I finally moved him out and I put the drop tag on him and I said I'm done. And I actually, Ryan Griffin is someone who I would rather own moving forward.
No, I will not disagree with that in any way, shape, or form. I've had, you know, Howard outside my top 20 tight ends going forward for pretty much the entire year. I did rank him okay last week, of course, but yes, I agree completely. Meanwhile, the Bucs just do not attempt to run the ball. Ronald Jones sees just 4 carries for 13 yards. Peyton Barber does not see a carry. He does catch 2 balls for 11 yards, and he finds the end zone. I get that it's against the Saints. They have a very tough run defense, but I mean, make an attempt, please. The game was not like out of hand right from the start. Can fantasy owners start Jones against the Falcons next week, Tag, or are you just avoiding it altogether?
Most people don't have a choice. They're going to have to start him, but this is disappointing. I mean, is it a coincidence that we saw the Bucs and the Jags get totally stomped because they didn't run the ball? They didn't have any sense of balance. Now, granted, the Bucs did fall behind rather early in this game. It's a little bit different than the Jags were, but still, you have to run the ball more than 6 times. They ran the ball 6 times. That's Bush League.
It's ridiculous. And again, you know, sometimes I feel like they weren't like way behind. I mean, they were behind, but not at the point where you're just like, well, we got to abandon the run. We just got to throw it nonstop. I mean, it was crazy to me. I mean, you know, at this point, I don't know. You've still got teams on bye next week. You know, the Falcons, despite the fact that what their defense looks like right now, I don't think you look at them and think, wow, they're a really tough defense. I can't start a running back against it. But just frustrating all around here for the Bucks overall. Let's move on to the afternoon games. The Niners, 36. The Cardinals, 26. The Niners score a late, you know, on the last play of the game, a fumble recovery for a touchdown. Jimmy G, 424 yards and 4 touchdowns with 2 interceptions. Debo Samuel leads the way with 8 catches for 134 yards. But let's talk running game here. Tags, no Matt Breida. You know, you had Raheem Mostert, who was kind of banged up coming into the game. Tevin Coleman, 12 carries for 14 yards against the Cardinals. Now, he does add 3 catches for 48 yards, but how are you feeling about Coleman here going forward?
Not great. I mean, this is the second time he struggled against Arizona. It's not good. I mean, I don't know how long they're going to keep Matt Breida out, but it seems like they always try and push him back, or he tries to come back, and when they really should just shut him down for a little while. But yeah, it's a little worrisome, man. With Kyle Juszczyk back, I thought that they would be able to run the ball a little bit better in this matchup. So definitely concerning. Definitely concerning. By the way, there's a nugget, and I'm sorry because I can't like get my mind off it to talk about any other players until I get this off my chest. I'm watching this game. So basically, as we're recording, these games are finishing up, right? And I have them on the monitors behind me or in front of me. And the final play of that game, it's a fumble, and San Francisco's up 4 points. I just want to say that the spread on this game was 9.5. I cannot understand the frustration that someone would be feeling right now that took Arizona +9.5, and then San Francisco picks up this. And by the way, it was the stupidest fumble where it's like guys were falling on it, and it kept bouncing out, and then it just like literally, I'm like, someone just dive on the ball, like end the game, and it just happened to bounce up at the right time. The guy he ran it in for a touchdown. Like, you have to watch the final play of that game. Well, if you bet on the Cardinals, you probably don't want to, but it was like it was one of those times where I'm like, this is tilt. Like, I would legitimately be crying if I were to have bet that game. And
the thing is, Tags, if you had listened to the Betting Pros NFL podcast on the Monday one, you would have known that at Monday the spread was 11.5, and you could have jumped on it right then, as we told you to do. That's why you got to listen to it. But yeah, that
I did.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, at 11.5.
The funny thing is, Dan, I did. So on the Betting Pros site, we have the same thing that we have on Fantasy Pros, but it's like they have a consensus on the bets and stuff like that, so you can lock them in where the spreads are at. I had the Cardinals at five units, okay, for 11.5. And I saw the spread moving down to 9.5. And I'm like, it's still a pretty big number. And then, like, watching the game happen, I'm like, oh, like, obviously, you know, whoever took the Cardinals has been pretty happy with this. And then it's like, I see that final play, and I was just like, my heart dropped for people that actually bet that game.
Yeah, gambling is not for the faint of heart. That is for sure. Let's move over here, though, to the Cardinals tags. Kind of a weird game here for Kyler Murray. He throws for only 150 yards, but he throws for 2 touchdown passes. He also runs for 67 yards and a touchdown. He continues to get it done, despite the fact, you know, they've got a tough schedule here. He continues to get it done week in and week out. Meanwhile, tags, Kenyon Drake, 16 carries for 67 yards. He also adds 6 catches for 13 yards. David Johnson does not have a touch. Are you dropping David Johnson at this point? What's happening here? Is he just still injured and they're just leaving him active for no reason or what?
Oh, I don't even know what to say here. They're going to have their bye in week 12, right? So it's a week. Maybe it was just like, all right, let's give David Johnson the week off and then we're gonna have the bye week. So he's essentially going to have like a 3-week break. He looked terrible. You know, we record these shows like right after the games are played, so we haven't had a chance to go back and rewatch them. I went back and rewatched the Cardinals game this last week, and I was like, David Johnson looks bad. Like, he looks like he's still playing hurt. And so I did have Kenyon Drake ranked higher this week. I didn't think that David Johnson would wind up without a touch. Like, I didn't see that coming. It's near droppable time for him. I don't even know if he's a great handcuff, to be honest with you, because if something happened to Drake, it's like, I think they would basically welcome Chase Edmonds back and say, you know, because if David Johnson's not playing, if he's playing hurt, and if he's like a back injury, just doesn't go away overnight. So I don't know. He's teetering on that drop territory for sure.
Yeah. At this point, I always like to say the same thing. At this point, you know, look, you have to make tough decisions. Okay. You really do at this point. And one of them is probably to drop David Johnson. I just can't imagine under what circumstance you're going to be able to feel comfortable starting him. They've got a bye this week, so maybe he gets healthy and something like that. I'm not saying he's a must drop or anything like that, but at this point, I mean, the guy has been active for a couple of games and completely killed fantasy owners who started them. So at this point, it's certainly something where I think you kind of need to avoid if there's any way to do so. Let's move on to Patriots 17, Eagles 10. Just kind of an ugly game here, sort of a quote-unquote defensive battle. Tom Brady throws for just 216 yards. There is one touchdown pass. It does not come from Tom Brady. It comes from Julian Edelman, who throws a 15-yard touchdown pass to Philip Dorsett, who I believe left this game with an injury. Nothing going on whatsoever on the ground here. Sony Michel leads the way with 10 carries for just 33 yards. Julian Edelman is the leading receiver with 5 catches for 53 yards. Ben Watson does have 3 for 52. Anything here on the Patriots side of the ball?
By Sony Michel, as long as he's, I mean, I don't think he's hurt. Like, again, we were recording the show. I want to make sure that there's no injuries that have happened since we started recording. But Sony Michel is someone that I'm looking at his, like, his playoff schedule. And so the way that the Patriots usually do things is they usually run the ball a ton towards the end of the season. They give Brady somewhat of a breather. And it makes a lot of sense, too, right? Because, like, they're a team that is getting ready for a postseason run. They want to keep their pass catchers healthy. And they're going to use their running backs, right? So they're going to play the Chiefs in Week 14, the Bengals in Week 15, and the Bills in Week 16. Those are like three premier run matchups. So Sony Michel, if you're set up for a playoff run, I know it's scary, but I might look to see if I can get Sony Michel on the cheap right now.
Man, you are a brave man. Somebody is going to be an impact fantasy running back for the Patriots towards the end of the season, right? I'm just not 100% convinced it's going to be Michel. It certainly could be. It could be Rex Burkhead, you know, who got more involved here, saw 7 touches. 14 yards rushing, 34 yards receiving. But certainly Michel is a guy who you can get dirt cheap at this point because he's clearly not doing very much of anything. Meanwhile, on the other side of the ball, Carson Wentz throws for 214 yards and a touchdown. That touchdown goes to Dallas Goedert, who in this weird thing where they originally ruled that it was a touchback because of an interception or either a fumble, but they reversed it. Zach Ertz has kind of a surprisingly good game here. I kind of thought that he would draw Stephon Gilmore. I'm not sure if he did. Again, we were recording during this, but 11 targets, 9 catches for 94 yards. Meanwhile, Jordan Howard out here with the injury. Miles Sanders leads the way, just 11 for 38 on the ground. He also catches 2 passes for 9 yards. So not a great day here. Thoughts here on the Eagles?
Yeah, this entire game was crap. Honestly, Tom Brady looked terrible. I know where I'm going back to the other side of the ball, but I just wanted to mention that Brady didn't look good. He was checking down a lot, and even the checkdowns that he did, he had no touch on them. It was like everything was the same speed. He missed James White in the flats countless times. There was a lot of things that Brady did wrong here, and, you know, we've seen him trending down a little bit, and it's every time that we see this happen, everybody starts to question, is Brady done? Is Brady done? I'm done betting against Brady. I'm not going to bet against him. He's probably going to bounce back at some point, but obviously it's something to monitor moving forward. Carson Wentz didn't look great, but again, him on his side, he has no receivers to throw to. Alshon Jeffrey's out. DeSean Jackson's out. Mac Hollins is starting. Nelson Aguilar starting in the perimeter. It's like, what is going on? It's ugly, and this was a brutal game. Miles Sanders kind of made do with what he had. Miles Sanders, I thought he looked pretty solid on the carries that he did have. He didn't have much room to work with. Overall, this, I think Dallas Goedert moving forward, he's someone that I would trust probably as a top 12 tight end, just because if Alshon Jeffrey's still dinged up, they're just missing passing options. And we knew that the Patriots were a tough matchup. So moving forward, like a guy that's going to get 6+ targets most weeks, I think Goedert is startable.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. So long as Jeffrey is out, certainly there just aren't options right now. Nelson Aguilar just continues to show why he can't be trusted. Jordan Matthews was brought on, but certainly not somebody who you're fearing. Let's move on to our final game here. Raiders 17, Bengals 10. Bengals keep it close again, but can't push it through the finish line. Derek Carr plays pretty well, 292 yards and a touchdown. He also rushes for a touchdown. Josh Jacobs does what you kind of expect him to do, 23 carries, 112 yards on the ground. He does lose a fumble, but again, he continues to chip in a little bit if you're in a PPR format, 3 catches for 12 yards. Meanwhile, the receivers, Darren Waller, bounces back a little bit for 5 for 78. Tyrell Williams, 4 for 82. Any thoughts here on the Raiders?
Not really. I mean, this game was obviously much closer than I think it should have been. I mean, the Raiders scored 3 points the entire second half. It was a really bad game for them, I would actually say, in terms of like as a team to beat the Bengals like in a very close game. But overall, Jacobs is the only one that I think you can trust like on a weekly basis, no matter the matchup. You just kind of plug him in there. But Tyrell Williams, he catches 4 balls. The newsflash there is that that's the first time since week 2 he's caught more than 3 passes. It's only 4. But I don't think there's a whole lot of difference between someone like Tyrell Williams and Robbie Anderson, where it's like they're not big volume guys and they're going to rely on touchdowns to get most of their fantasy production. I know Tyrell Williams gets 82 yards here, but the yardage hasn't even been here for him the majority of the year. So Tyrell Williams has moved into like wide receiver 4 territory, so I don't think he's like an every week start. It is good to see Darren Waller get back into the top 5 conversation with 7 targets, because that's something that I was a little worried about.
Yeah, we did talk about that last week about, you know, his recent production being a little worrisome. And just to be clear, Robbie Anderson would kill to have 5 games in a row with 3 catches and decent yardage totals as opposed to Williams. Let's talk about the Bengals here briefly. I mean, Mixon doesn't see the volume that you kind of hoped for after last week where he saw 30 carries. He does see 15 and runs for 86 yards, including a brilliant touchdown run where he was totally bottled up on one side and reversed field to get there. He also has 1 catch for 17 yards. Ryan Finley, meanwhile, not good, just 115 yards passing. Auden Tate, we were talking about this right as we were beginning to record. He's a leading receiver, 4 catches on 6 targets for 56 yards, but he gets carted off. I don't know the exact nature of the injury, but let me ask you very quickly here, Tags. Tyler Boyd, one catch for 0 yards on 3 targets. I mean, what are you doing with Boyd right now? Are you dropping him? Or are you just keeping him on your bench? You can't start him, right?
I'm hoping that Andy Dalton goes back under center. Like when Ryan Finley completes 13 passes for 31 yards against the Raiders, you have to say this isn't good. I mean, I know they have 0 wins and they're going to end up with the number 1 overall pick. I don't know. It's like throw your hands up in the air. I legit. I'm not even. This is not me hiding. I'm not going to hide. I'm going to say that I had Tyler Boyd ranked as a top 24 wide receiver this week. Felt like he had a lot of potential in this matchup, that he should present a high floor, and that didn't happen. I mean, the Raiders are a bad secondary to begin with, and they were down LaMarcus Joyner. They're starting nickel cornerback, and still.
Yeah, I think to sum it up, you cannot start Tyler Boyd right now at all, no matter what. I mean, I own him. I've been starting him each and every week. Yeah, I agree. I like him this week. But he's at the point right now where you can't at this point, you know, regardless of what's going on. I mean, if Andy Dalton gets back in there, fine. But if not, yep, leave him on your bench. I wouldn't drop him. But for now, I'd certainly leave him on my bench. Well, that's going to do it for today's show, everyone. Thanks again to our sponsor, FanDuel, where you can get $5 in FanDuel credits by going to FanDuel.com/FantasyPros. And also thanks to Pristine Auction, who sponsors our Dak Prescott helmet giveaway. Remember, they have a ton of auctions every day where you can get all sorts of fantastic items for your man cave. Just go to PRISTINEauction.com. And don't forget to use the referral code FantasyPros for a $5 voucher. Enjoy the rest of your Week 11 football, everyone. Tags and Bobby will be back to talk you through your waiver wire. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve slowly in a pool full of your love.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network,
available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.